Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. In the spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. Now, the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq closed with record highs last week following data that signaled positive strength for the U.S. economy. In a market that's reacting quickly to headlines, how are portfolios adjusting their asset allocation? And maybe investors should consider alternatives, such as private credit, as they search for positive yield. Joining us today is Joanna Ossinger, Global Markets Editor at Bloomberg. Joanna, thanks for joining us today. Hope you're keeping safe.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
So Goldman Sachs, let's talk about that, recently boosted its year-end target for the S&P. Last week, we saw the benchmark index eclipse its February high when it closed at 3,397 points on Friday. What drove it, you think?
Well, this is a lot of strategists catching up with the huge rally we've had off those March lows. So a lot of people in, say, February, March, April had targets like 3,400, 3,500, and they took them down because they thought things were going to be really bad for the full year. And then we just had this massive rally. And so Goldman had a target of 3,000 and they upped it to 3,600. They're not the only ones. Many of them are saying they were surprised by the extent to which the markets were boosted by central banks, especially the Federal Reserve, but other central banks globally, and even by fiscal stimulus around the world, and just how effective that's been at keeping the markets moving higher.
How might it evolve in the week ahead then? Getting any higher, you reckon?
It's possible. And futures are up again today. And it seems like people are just really looking for signs of improvement on the virus front. At the same time, there are still pockets where we're seeing relapses. New Zealand is having more cases. We see that Bali, for instance, is shutting to tourists for the full year. Yep. So we're definitely not out of the woods, but there are improvements in some areas, including in the U.S., where a lot of people really are looking specifically.
So how the pandemic unfolds obviously will still have an effect.
For sure.
Yeah.
And we're looking for news on vaccines and even therapies. And even things like the improving death rate, for instance, is still a big deal for markets, because that can also help with the optimism and just getting countries to relax their shutdowns and things like that. So there are so many factors that go into it, but all of the virus stuff still is really dominant in the market.
Joanna, so with stocks overly expensive and long-dated treasuries too cheap, how likely are we to see a shift in that traditional 60-40 portfolio allocation in a hunt to balance risk with reward?
Well, it makes sense, because you have a stock-bond relationship that isn't quite what it was before. It always used to be that stocks were incredibly volatile and you had bonds that were a little bit safer. And now sometimes bonds can even be volatile. That was shown in the March and April period. And there are certain types of bonds that might be more or less volatile. So actually, you have a lot of strategists that are saying we need to get away from that 60-40 portfolio, maybe try other assets. And even Cornerstone Macro, for instance, a couple ex-Fed staffers recently ran something like 10 million models each on equities and bonds to find the optimal amount that you should have in a portfolio.
The split should be?
Well, they said it depends what you're looking for. But for instance, if you want a portfolio with the same volatility as 60-40, but you could actually hold 20% in stocks, half in two-year treasuries, and most of the rest in 30-year bonds, and you would get about an additional 10 percentage points in annual returns. And of course, this is according to the models. So, you know, models don't always work perfectly, but they're saying that there are a lot of ways to do better than that 60-40 portfolio that's traditionally used.
We're speaking with Joanna Ossinger, who's Global Markets Editor at Bloomberg. Speaking of splits, why are we starting to see a split when it comes to mega cap allocation for mutual funds and hedge funds?
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. So we're seeing a difference partially because mutual funds are running up against position limits. They can't have necessarily so many, they can't hold one company in such a high weighting, many of them, whereas hedge funds can mostly do whatever they want. So some of these companies like Apple and Microsoft are getting so big that the mutual funds aren't able to hold as much of them. So you have mutual funds kind of underweight the technology stocks hedge funds are a little bit as well, but not to the same extent. And they also, where they really differ is on financials. Mutual funds are big in financials right now, and hedge funds are avoiding them. So there's a split on the financials and in general on value shares, that value shares have been beaten down this year. There are a lot of people saying, oh, it'll turn the corner. We'll finally get the value shares moving higher.
Hope
and it hasn't
eternal.
Quite happened. Right, exactly. And mutual funds are betting on that a lot more than hedge funds are right now.
Okay, then, so why should investors consider alternatives then, such as private credit, as they search for that positive yield in a world of low or negative interest rates? I mean, where are the opportunities?
Well, that's exactly it. If you have the sovereign bonds, for instance, that just are so low yielding, you're looking for a place where you can make a little bit more money. And if you have something like private credit, you might be able to get a better return. For instance, Nuveen did a piece recently saying that they think things like real estate would be good to do because that will at least give you some steady yield and you might be able to get 3 to 5%, for instance, per year, as opposed to low or even negative. I mean, there are about $15 trillion of negative yielding assets in the world right now. That's a lot.
Changing gears, you recently wrote an article about Singapore's restaurants and what they're learning for the post-COVID-19 world. I mean, as you talk to people, what surprised you think?
You know, the main thing that surprised me, we all know that it was hard on many sectors of the economy being in the lockdown. But what I thought was really interesting was just how resilient people were and how during that time, a lot of people put so much effort into being creative, into coming up with something that they thought would work after the lockdown. So you're getting people who are launching new concepts right now. There are things in the works where people are trying to get funding and trying to start something in the next few months. And I've had people, for instance, Ryan Clift at the Tippling Club was saying that he thinks in the next, say, 6 to 8 months, we're going to have some really interesting concepts coming out in Singapore.
Give us an example. Well, did they IP it already?
Well, you had the restaurant Nuri, for instance. I believe it started a new concept just up. And you had a couple of pizza places that are doing new things. Lucali BYGB is just launched in the past couple months. You know, you have, and these are, a lot of them, from what I'm hearing, are middle market concepts. So it's not going to be super expensive. It's going to be something where it might be comfort food, for instance. There's a dining place called Mia Tavola that is working on what it can do. It started with communal dining, and now they're looking at what other things they can do. They do have a takeaway business right now. So, you know, there are a lot of interesting concepts that are that will hopefully start being kind of in that middle range.
So vague, Joanna. They swore to secrecy, didn't they?
Kind of.
Okay, before we go, the Republican National Convention starts today. There's also some data due out of the U.S. this week. What else are you keeping an eye on?
Well, a lot of it is the Federal Reserve and the Jackson Hole Conference, which of course is online. But that will be interesting to see what Jay Powell is saying, what the other central bankers are saying, particularly because they're looking at that inflation targeting framework. And of course, we'll still be looking at gauges of jobs and anything going on with the U.S.-China relationship. So there's a lot to watch this week.
All right. Joanna Ossinger, Global Markets Editor, Bloomberg. Joanna, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
This has been In the Spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.